Watch this. No way!
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Cookie Jar Golf Podcast. I am Tom Mills and today I'm joined by Sam Williams.
Greetings, Thomas. Thank you for having me.
No. You look like you're in your normal humble abode of Bromsgrove.
We are sat at home.
And we've got Sir Bruce Fitzpatrick. Oh. It's a holiday. Why not?
Yeah, that address has to be binned for 2022. I'll give you a pass on it one more time, but yeah, pleasure to be here, chaps. Rounding out the year.
Well, it's just nice to have you on the pod, to be honest, Bruce. It's just a pleasure. Oh. I think it's probably just excitement for your appearance that's just sort of creeping over for Mills.
And this doesn't look like your normal abode, Bruce. Are you on your travels?
Yeah, spending New Year up in Scotland, so dialing in remotely. In fact, the little gift package you sent me, given that I'd left my regular microphone at home, was very much welcomed. I took a picture of it, beautifully presented, Tom, with the wires and splitter and microphone, everything neatly aligned. So
did you like your made up name?
Yes, I did. I did like that. I did like the repurposing. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I've not followed this. So what's happened?
I had a client in my real job that cancelled on me, but I'd already made their box. So for the purposes of for this posting to Bruce, he was Isabel. So I sent him a little box with Isabel on. So that was his
lovely
name.
Box, but actually. Lovely box.
Well, Mills Films, we do it properly.
Do you know what else is lovely? Is that a little
lovely
Cookie Jar Golf merino crew neck slip you're wearing there?
I tell you what, it's Bruce. Always a sign of a really good podcaster who just talks about a lot of visual content that the listener has no possibility of really being able to see.
Take us there then, or visualize. Take us. Fabric check.
Yeah, you'd almost be forgiven for thinking the reason Sam has mentioned this is because he's been the brains behind the recent stash outlay, organization, branding, whatever you want to call it. But yes, no, nice little bit of cookie jar merch that Santa brought me in a round neck with a small little logo. So yeah, very comfortable.
Peter Millar coming to a website soon.
Before we dive into the main aim of this podcast today, you might as well give us what's about to come in the new year, Sam. We might as well plug it because we're talking about it now anyway.
Yeah, so a few exciting bits in the merchandise section. So we're going to be having, we've got some head covers. I've got an absolute raft of head covers that have arrived in the warehouse, aka the spare room. Those will all come in. And we've got a pretty exciting little collection that's about to drop with Peter Millar. So we've got three items just to kind of kick it off, but a few nice little winter pieces there. So Bruce, very nicely sporting that crew neck jumper. A few people spotted the quarter zip that you had, and we've got something else coming as well. So all of that to come. And if you're, if you want to be the first to know, just make sure you signed up to the newsletter.
Right, you are. And today, I suppose we're going to be looking at kind of a year in review, so the podcast that we've done this year, and talk about some of the pods that we like to do and some of the films that we've done, and kind of, I think Sam's going to give us all an appraisal. Sam is our boss, so he's going to give us
I'm not giving the appraisals. Oh, no.
Oh, gosh. And
I might be chief exec, but, you know, this is 360 feedback here, gentlemen.
Did we do that last year? Did we do it? We did do appraisals, didn't we, on air? Gosh.
Yeah. I can't even remember what the feedback was, actually.
From the hip a little bit more and not maybe take myself so seriously and kind of get more towards Tom Mills's level of just firing into people and swinging through the saloon doors, as it were.
Well, I'm in the wonderful position where I probably have been called the diva of the podcast. I take criticism pretty poorly. And I've nearly got it to the stage where I want it, which is you're just too afraid to say anything, which is just brilliant. And I just get to do what I want, and I'm nearly there. I think I've got to work on Brucey a little bit. He's still got a few opinions which I need to beat out of him. But going into 2021, I would like to get better in the vlogging. I'd like to be a better vlogger.
What do you mean by that? Sorry, what do you mean by that?
I feel like I made a few silly mistakes this tour in equipment and in how we were going to do it, but life's a learning curve. We'll get better next time. I want to be a better presenter next year. I want to do less of the ums, which I tend to do a lot when I talk on a podcast. And I want to be able to solicit good guests and good advice from your fine selves.
Yeah, no, I think you make some brilliant points there, Mills. I mean, you know, who could deny that you are the sort of the technician of the pod and the man who delivers content on a weekly, if not daily, basis for our listeners. I think you know, if I'm being brutally honest, when we hop on these videos, I think, you know, your dress sense maybe sometimes is kind of left wanting a little bit. We can't really forget the Jason Derulo hat that you decided to sport.
I mean, it's very much like my school report, isn't it? It's kind of, Sam would do better for thinking first, talking second. It's probably the best way I could summarise. He's got two ears and one mouth.
Yeah.
Use them in that quantity.
Taken straight from the word of Malcolm Duck.
Oh, yeah. When we had our dinner with Malcolm Duck on tour, and he had to sit Sam down and tell him he's got two ears and one mouth, and to use them in that quantity was... You'd only met him about 2 hours ago. I don't even think I was actually talking that much. This is when Bruce was on his woke agenda. Let's not spin it, though. I think, that's clearly one of my many foibles. I mean, look, I'm an optimist. So what have I brought to the party? I think, I guess kind of a bit of proactivity, I'd like to think. So I'm pretty happy with, I feel like I've been pretty proactive. I sort of run that social media with a bit of, I mean, with a degree of control freakishness that's probably unwarranted, but I am pretty anal on it. I'm pretty diligent on trying to get guests and people on the pod, and that's been a pretty strong suit. I think I've also got a relatively keen eye for some good opportunities, and that's been borne fruit this year with things like Cleve Hill, which are projects I think we've all collectively really enjoyed being involved in, and that's been a pretty interesting story. I think that, as always, again, back to my sort of school report when I was 10 years old, Sam can be really effective when he channels himself effectively, but he needs to learn to temper his enthusiasm, which can sometimes border into destruction and excitement at times. And
it'd be interesting to dig it up to see if we've actually actioned any of it, which I highly doubt, because none of us could remember.
No, if anything,
it was.
We've got worse. I think all of our foibles have actually consistently got worse throughout this year. Before we jump into the specifics of the year, though, like, I don't know, what's your take on 2021 in the jar and in golf?
Well, it's been an interesting one, isn't it? 57 podcasts. I've gone through and looked. 57 podcasts we've released in 21. And we've done 22 films. I don't think that's bad going.
Good output. Yeah, I'd say very good output. I mean, it's funny. I think looking back as a bit of preparation for this podcast, I just almost kind of forgot how many podcasts we actually did this year, and some that seem like a real distant memory. Mm. Whether that's a product of, you know, being in lockdown for the first 3-4 months of the year, not really getting out and seeing people, doing a lot of stuff remotely, not really doing much in the way of capturing film content. It just feels like we've done a lot of different episodes, quite a few guests who have come on and been very generous and giving of their time. But yeah, I mean, a lot of interesting conversations we've been lucky enough to have. Just going back through some of the early ones, like... Are we going to kick this off by going through the sort of highlight?
Well, we
pods?
Talk about the podcast, and we've got to talk about the podcast, haven't we, first? But I agree. There's so many when I look through, I'm like, yeah, God, I forgot we did that. It's stuff like, I remember me and Mills doing a one on a Friday afternoon with, you know, like Daryl Evans, and we were on for like 2.5 hours because we just kept talking forever afterwards, and just that being really interesting. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot we did that in February. And like, I listen to some of the ones that are so disposable, because you've got things like, you know, whether it's a wrap up from a tour event or something that's gone on, it's kind of just a short, sharp 30-minute roundup pod.
Well, they're all short and sharp, aren't they, Bruce? They're all short and sharp, aren't they, Bruce?
No. I mean, Sam's right, though. The wrap-up pods definitely can kind of blend together, because it ends up just being us taking shots at one another and pulling one another up on small little slips of the tongue or grammatical errors or whatever it is, and different takes. Sam's, you know, some bad take that Sam's made about the state of Phil Mickelson's golf or something like that, just teeing up some, you know, totally deserved criticism because the guy then goes and wins the PGA. Or yeah, I mean, those ones are very amusing, but they kind of blend together, really, don't they? It's hard to pick them out. But I mean, I think the first pod, if I'm not mistaken, of 2021 was Mike Clayton and Ed Cartwright from CDP coming on.
No, I think it was earlier. No, I think first one was, I think we dropped a second part of our Scotland diaries, didn't we?
Did we?
Yeah, 4th of Jan that went out. And then there was a couple of kind of, I've got some dreadful titles I'm looking at here, Tough Scenes and Breadcrumbs. This was quite interesting because this is the first one I went to. I think those disposable pods are actually quite good because they're almost like little time capsules. So whereas you listen to like maybe the Cult thing or the Babe Zaharias, and you could probably tune into that in 10 years' time, the facts still remain the same. You know, it's not topical. The topical ones, I'm listening to it and I'm like, oh yeah. The first 3 months of the year, you can only go to a supermarket or to a garden center, but you couldn't play golf. It's like I'd totally forgotten the garden center nonsense that we had in the UK with lockdown.
Yeah.
But they're almost kind of like mini time capsules. So there's a couple of those where you go, I think the other one was Hats Off to Hat On, and I seem to remember you were absolutely lambasting me for that title.
Yeah, on the basis of those two titles, I think that could be a resolution for 2022, which is better titling of podcasts, because
maybe get a bit more clickbaity.
Tough scenes and breadcrumbs is really not a lot for a new listener, someone who's just joining the jar, to go on. I mean,
okay, that's fine. I'll take that one on the chin.
So anyway, Clayton and Cartwright though from CDP, I remember you guys ran that podcast. I was on there and I listened to it back, and again, the great Mike Clayton just giving you a lot of pearls of wisdom about course architecture and the exciting project they've got at Seven Mile Beach. And then, sorry, carry on, because you're clearly keen to interrupt me.
No, but that was one of the announcements. Seven Mile Beach was like probably our first ever like primo announcement. That was a big one for us.
That was very exciting. And then I remember hearing Ed give a very interesting take on golf course committees and the idea of, you know, committees being forced to enter into legally binding contracts before people join committee if they're going to make any changes to the course architecture or the master plan.
By the time we get asked to go in, they've kind of made a decision that they need some help or they need some advice. And by definition, the committee / the grandees of the place have already come to the conclusion the course by definition isn't right, otherwise why would they ask us in? That said, it's strange because if I think about some of our existing mandates where we're working, sometimes you get a little resistance and you say, well, you know, clearly X has to happen, and you find that X, they don't want it to happen because X was done by one of the recent chairman of Green or members. And the custodians of the course piece that Mike wrote in December, if anybody has read it, and if anybody hasn't read it, they should. It talks about why would you want to be on a green committee? And if you are on a green committee, you know, are you qualified to be on it? It asks the right pertinent questions. And one of the big issues in this country, which is very different from other parts of Europe. I mean, I now, you know, working with Frank, I say this as somebody, you know, Frank's obviously very active and has been for quite some time in continental Europe. We have a governance system in the UK where, on average, your Green Committee member, including the chairman even, doesn't last more than 3 or 4 years. And sometimes at one of the courses where I went for a meeting a couple of weeks ago, unbelievably, it's 2 years is the rotational system. How on earth is that supposed to work? I mean, you know, I think, Mike, you used the story, you know, you get 1 year to sort of learn what you should be doing. The second year you might do it. The third year you become old news. So this doesn't work.
Which is the point Mackenzie made in the book. You know, in the spirit of St. Andrews, Mackenzie wrote about this 100 years ago. It's a terrible system. Don't do it.
Yeah.
And we have, and you know, read the book. He explains why that system is never going to be a good one.
Well, you did in your notes, I think at the end of your piece, you said that every club should give its Green Committee and its Christmas stocking, and maybe they can do it as a New Year's present now, a copy of Spirit at St. Andrews, and everybody should read it. along with one or two other journals, I totally agree. So yes, it's a strange situation because you're meeting with people and you know that frequently by the let's say you get appointed and you're doing a long-term plan. I mean, look at the Addington. The Addington, forget COVID because it's delayed us a bit, but even if COVID hadn't happened, the Addington is a five-year project, de minimis. There's so much work to do there. The infrastructure's got to be sorted out. The woodland's got to be sorted out. And that's before you even get to the architecture and the stuff that we do. So it's a big project and it's a great project. But, you know, I think about how it normally goes. In a normal club, and the Addington, we're very lucky because it's run by a managing director, it's owned by a trust, and there's a very stable management structure at the top.
So rare. Yeah.
That's very so out rare. Of the ordinary in this country. Now, even if it had just been 5 or 6 years, but to make a real difference, you know, Frank's been the architect at Dupin and Royal Hague, which are now in the top five in Europe, and he's taken them from not nothing, but they were way down to that. He's been at it for 15 years, and the rankings really kicked in after, say, 11, 12. You know, Frank and I are both ex-bankers, and there's one of these charts that ex-bankers do, which is a regression chart of how long you've worked there and the ranking. And surprise, surprise, the correlation is damn good. So, you know, you're dealing with people, and you know in England or in the UK, they'll be gone. It changes, the thing changes. Whereas in the rest of Europe, I mean, my favourite story, which I've told before, is at Dupin in Utrecht, if you want to join the Green Committee, or if you get asked to join the Green Committee, you must sign a document to say that you adhere to the plan.
Which was definitely the sort of controversial statements we like to get debate flowing on the Cookie Jar podcast, isn't it? But that was just a full, you know, full-blooded discussion of all things course architecture. A good way to kick off the year, I thought, in terms of guest spots.
And 7 Mile Beach, looking at where that's going as well. And you think that was nearly a year ago. That's
had they
moved
broken
on massively.
Ground?
No, I don't think they had. I think the announcement had just come in because it was, they'd got hold of the land, they'd got the permission. I think they'd done some of the high level routing and stuff. But then you see what, you know, Lucas and the rest of the team are putting out there around that project. And it's like, yeah, wow, that's moved on. But then I think 3 days later, we then drop another big announcement, which was Cleve Hill, new owners announced. So, you know, when we released that pod, there was no, you know, Cleve Hill was essentially not going to be saved. 3 days later, the podcast then with Nick and Sam, the new owners. And it's like, crikey, then in that whole 12-month period, we've since had an absolutely banging party up there. Spent a lot of time there, made some more friends down there. You know, kind of, it's just amazing when you look at those two pods in isolation, how much moves on in the space of 1 year.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, Lucas, you know, who's down in Oz, was at the Cleve Hill event. You know, it's like, it's crazy when you think what a difference a year makes.
So I guess summarizing, because unfortunately, I don't think, you know, time is going to permit us, nor would anyone be interested just going through a breakdown of each pod in sequence.
That was never the plan.
Yeah. But if you guys are going to sum up your favorite pods of the year, Tom, do you want to kick us off? Which are the ones that sort of linger in the memory?
Well, I think if we do one at a time, because otherwise there might be some favorite pod theft. So I think we'll just sort of kick it around in a sort of round table. But for me, I mean, it was a year of announcements for us, and we did do the 7 Mile Beach announcement, and towards the latter end of the year, we did the top 100 golf courses announcement, which was pretty cool. But I really like the Cleve Hill one personally. I mean, Sam had that idea to go down and play it when we heard that it was being closed down, and to sort of go through the whole progress of that, or the process of it, of filming it and trying to get involved with the campaign, and then finally being able to meet Nick and Sam from the Cotswold Hub Company and be able to announce it. And I remember when we released the podcast, it was a fairly, I mean, this is so low standards, unbelievable. There was a fairly heavy media embargo, like from when we could do it. So, you know, we were told it was 10 a.m. and then we released the pod at 10. It was like, no, it's not. We can't do it yet. It needs to be midday. And we were like kicking the pod back in the day. And it all felt quite official and quite cool. But to sort of be able to announce that and now see Cleve Hill go from strength to strength for me, that was a really cool period for us.
And today we have an obscenely exciting episode for you, because we are able to announce the owners of Cleve Hill. We are joined by Nick Hovey and Sam Foyle of the Cotswold Hub Company. Hello, guys. Congratulations on your bid.
We have some canned applause for this. Oh, yeah, moment, Thomas. This is
we're
where
waiting,
the radio
we're waiting for some applause.
All that sort of stuff. On behalf of Cookie Jar, massive congratulations, guys. I mean, obviously, Nick, we spoke last night. It was like getting a phone call with Kaiser Soze revealing himself. I was like, oh my God, you know, after, you know, lots of people want to know what's going to happen with Cleve Hill. And getting that news through last night was, yeah, it was mega exciting. So first and foremost, how are you both feeling about it?
Well, absolutely, the build-up of us knowing for a little while and not being able to tell anyone is pretty tough. Like, it's because it's the sort of news you want to tell everybody. That's how I felt. So telling you last night was as exciting for me as it was for you hearing about it, I'm sure. So, yeah, it's been great. It's been good.
It's been a long build-up, you know, from the very outset when we started looking at the project and will we, won't we get it, and the hard work. I mean, we've put some seriously hard work into it over the last few months. But to actually when we got that call from the council and the trust that we'd been selected as the preferred bidder, we were both just, I mean, we're both a bit emotional, actually, which is not normally like us. It was a big moment. Yeah, we've just been chuffed.
Yeah, actually, and following on the back of that, I don't think you call it pod theft, but I think it was the podcast we recorded straight after that was Ronan Rafferty. And that, Sam and I are on that podcast. I mean, that just definitely, I mean, probably the most enthusiastic, passionate, fast-talking guest we've yet had on the podcast today, and it's going to be tough to top because that was just an absolute whirlwind. I don't know how long we ended up speaking to Ronan for in the end. He was extremely generous with his time, and I think he's pretty keen to come back on, and we only really got probably halfway through his career at best, but you know, the idea that, or that anecdote of him qualifying for the Irish Open or some other European tour event at the age of 14 is something that still lingers in the memory. And, you know, the stories of him playing the Ryder Cup at the Belfry and worrying about hitting the persimmon wood off the binding and into the crowd. I mean, just what a brilliantly honest, sort of candid account of his time on tour and what it was like playing the European tour in those days and also amateur golf. Just another brilliant guest pod that kickstarted the year. I think really built up a bit of momentum for us.
Lord Rafferty at Brora, wasn't it? He was talking about Ted, like, Lord Rafferty's here, and it's like, guys, yeah, I just want to play the course. No, I totally buy into that. So that's not surprisingly. I broke mine down into a few categories. And what's quite strange is a lot of people, when we sort of said, like, what was your favorite episode of 2021? I don't think we had any responses that were all the same. One thing we do have that's consistent is Ronan is one of the most requested second appearance guests that we have from people. I put mine into most enjoyable to do, most enjoyable to listen to, and for me the most surprising, funnily enough, the most enjoyable to do was Ronan. The one for me that was most surprising, and I remember the idea behind this podcast was when we were playing up at North Berwick, and good friend of the jar Andy Crummy was talking to me about the stuff they've been doing at the Gullen Visitor Clubhouse and some of the stuff they have there for Babe Zaharias. And I said to him, well, I've always had this idea of tracking down a really good historian to do a piece on Babe Zaharias. So it kind of, that conversation kickstarted me, I guess, to go and track someone down. And when we got Susan Califf, who kind of responded to an email I sent her, who's, you know, doesn't really have much background in the game of golf. She's just, you know, hugely into social studies, you know, LGBTQ plus work, you know, huge advocate for kind of, you know, women's rights. I thought
not
this
your
is
typical
quite...
reading list, to be fair, is it, Sam?
That no, kind of I think it's fair to say it's a slight shift away from maybe the staple diet of the PGA Tour commentary that we do. I'll be honest, I thought this is going to go one of two ways. And what a brilliant podcast it was. No, jokes aside. I seem to remember you going, is this definitely the right place, Sam? Because I'm not sure there's much golf stuff to go on here. She, you know, is this going to work? And I was like, well,
how much common ground have we got?
I think she's quite a good, interesting figure. And I think there's a huge amount of material there. And I find her whole career fascinating. And for me, that was most surprising because I would say she was possibly one of the best and most eloquent guests we've had on the podcast this year.
Well, of course, there was that line in that Babe Zaharias pod where, like, well, I'll play it now and we'll talk about it.
athletes now, they're really, you know, a student, an exceptional athlete might be encouraged to play basketball, football, something, obviously football more for men than women in high school. But once talent is identified, the athlete is really encouraged to focus on baseball, focus on track and field. And Babe didn't really have that type of coaching. And so she pursued what interested her. In fact, when she starts playing for the insurance company, after the two national basketball championships, they can see that she's clearly bored. And so they come up with an idea as a stunt, actually, which was to have her compete as a one-woman team in Evanston, Illinois, in 1932 for the U.S. Olympic tryouts in track and field. And so in one afternoon, she competes in 10 events and sets world records in 6 of them.
Ridiculous.
And the second place team, the University of Illinois, scores 22 points. And Babe Didrikson scores 30 points.
So, like, just hearing that stat about, you know, what she did and the amount of world records she got, it's just absolutely... I remember when, like, because you boys did that pod and I listened to it and I was like, that is nuts. I mean, genuinely insane stuff.
Yeah. You think it's almost a misspeak, don't you? You're like, yeah. Surely you've got your facts wrong there, Susan.
If there's one podcast that you haven't listened to this year to go back into the archives that'll give you something fresh, I'd say the Babe Zaharias one, 100%.
Yeah, that was on my list. Babe Zaharias was my number one, actually, of most interesting ones we did this year.
Yeah, I think we did a couple, actually, on that sort of line of inquiry of just looking at figures in the game who've had a huge impact. In Babe's case, perhaps not that well documented. But then we also did a podcast with David Normal on Arnold Palmer, which is another podcast, I guess you could almost say is kind of evergreen in the sense you could go back and listen to that whenever, really. And it's still very relevant because, you know, talking about Mr. Palmer's, or I should say Arnold's legacy, that distinction that David, well, he puts it very eloquently, and it's probably best just listening to his take on things.
1962, the U.S. Open at Oakmont. You know, here we were in Arnold's backyard. He was supposed to win. He finished tied with Nicklaus below 72 holes after really being favored in so many ways. And again, Nicklaus, this was his first professional tournament win. He beats Arnold in a playoff, and Jack didn't three-putt, and Arnold three-putted 11 or 12 times. I can't remember the exact number, but the point is it was hugely disappointing. And I think that was, in a lot of ways, the beginning, post-Cherry Hills, of this sort of public enmity between the two, because Arnold was beloved and Jack was taking away what he should have been winning in the eyes of the public. And that's where I think, let's go back to Deacon Palmer's son. Remember, I think one of the key differences between Jack and Arnold is to remember that Jack grew up as the son of a member at Scioto, and Arnold grew up as the son of the greenkeeper. And there's just a difference in the two.
Yeah.
But I think part of what that's all about, this is in no way diminishing Jack, but I think just a reflection on who Arnold was as Deacon Palmer's son, is that there are just certain ways you treat people, and that the game deserves our dignity above any sort of partisan passions of the moment. And so if Arnold did speak up for Jack, I think it was out of respect to Jack, but even more so out of respect to the game that his father taught him in the first place.
Yeah, I think just really, you know, David does such a brilliant job of like painting that picture of what Arnold Palmer was like, and where he's kind of where he got that very, very sort of generous kind of nature from, and how he was so approachable and kind of beloved by presidents and just regular fans alike. So that's definitely, I mean, that was another podcast that was a kind of historical deep dive in a way that was on my list of favorite pods of 2021.
Any other notable shout outs, gents? Because I think there's some other highlights that would be remiss not to recap as part of this podcast. But do you want to rattle through a few of yours then, Mills, that you've not covered?
Yeah, I mean, another Ed Cartwright. This is probably the second time we mentioned Ed Cartwright, maybe the third that he's been on. But the Harry Colt one with Frank Pont and Ed was pretty good. And Frank's just so good, isn't he? So candid, and he talks so well and explains it so well that I thought that was a really good one. And I think it was quite nice. Another one for me was sort of peeking behind the curtain with Jeff Shackelford as well, just to just kind of get to know him better. You know, you hear his commentary and read his newsletters and stuff, but it was really good to get to know him, you know, and be able to ask him questions about the variety of things that he's achieved in his life. And, you know, they were all pretty good for me. I like those ones.
I remember doing Jeff's podcast with you, and we were on for about 45 minutes afterwards talking about Kimmel and all sorts of other arbitrary things in the game, and just thinking, yeah, like he really is a brother from a different mother in many respects. He's just so passionate kindred about spirit, the game, isn't he? He is really, isn't he? And he
is a kindred spirit, yeah.
But yeah, it's rare to find someone with just that insane level of passion for the game, who's been around it for so long and worked in the game. And you find a lot of those people maybe lose some of the interest and the enthusiasm. He's just like full of it, so much so, you know, it's just pouring out of every corner with him. I really enjoyed Jeff. That wasn't the most surprising for obvious reasons, but yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites for the year. Mm. I'm going to chuck in one to say more generally about the pods that I think have been good. And a lot of people have said in the kind of, you know, comments and stuff, said, you know, want more of them. A lot of people cited things as being their favorite episode. Some of the course diaries ones, and not because those people who've messaged us are members at those courses, but just because I think they find them quite interesting and a bit, you know, a little bit kind of more niche perhaps. But I've quite enjoyed doing some of those. Like, I mean, having a little, again, to use that, you know, expression, time capsule, but really nice having a little pod from our weekend down at Burden, Bruce. You know, that was one of the best weekends of the year playing in the Brent Knoll. And having that little course diaries podcast was brilliant. And there's the one of me and Tom where we're absolutely giddy as kippers because Tom shot in the 60s for the first time and last time, I will add, of his golfing career.
Have you ever shot in the 60s?
Punchy.
Shots fired. No, but you did, to be fair, by your own admission, that was how you labeled it. But I think they're great. I think they're really good. And I'm looking forward to doing loads more of those because I would like to be doing some of this stuff, maybe with club archivists or, you know, people of real interest at those golf clubs at some of the places we get to visit, because, you know, I think the films are brilliant. You know, I look at the, you know, the things we've done through the, you know, Old Tom Trail series or the County Down films or Rye or Berkhamsted or wherever. But I also think it's a different way of telling a story. And I think those course diaries pods could be absolutely awesome next year.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's a great thing for us to sort of try and dip the toe in the water earlier in the year and to have some really nice feedback on that and keep it going. I think, what was that line that Sam had that he kept quoting at the beginning of those podcasts? It's like an ever-changing thing. Yeah. What? It must be in there somewhere. It's like, it's a constantly evolving beast or something.
It's an ever-evolving beast. An ever-evolving beast.
Something like that. But he trotted out on several occasions. I'm sure Tom can find the
I think that was more internally, because it was like, we can't just keep talking about how good golf courses are. And I was like, you're missing the point with course diaries. It's not just about talking like the merits of hole 1 to 18 or whether we think it's a good or a bad course. It's about, you know, I think it's just about capturing some of the fun we've had out on the golf course, maybe some of the cool stories that have happened there. You know, hell, the other week we were down at Prince's for the thing and the whole, you know, Laddie Lucas stuff and, you know, the Sarazen stories and stuff. You know, they're just great 30-minute podcasts to do. We haven't done that 30-minute podcast yet. I'm sure we'll do it next year with Rob or someone like that. But they are really, really cool things to have, because more and more I'm getting on, you know, on a train or in the car to drive to a certain golf club and I'm typing into Spotify, you know, Royal County Down. And invariably there is a podcast that somebody's recorded about Royal County Down. And it's quite a nice little way to break up the journey, to get you in the mood for it. And it's amazing how many people have messaged us saying, oh, I was driving down to Burnham and Barrow to play golf. Podcast just got me right in the mood for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess when we started this thing, you know, best part of 2 years ago now, we maybe felt, oh, is that a bit too self-indulgent talking about our trips to these places? But actually, you know, the Scotland film from 2020, the tour films that we did in two parts and the two tour diaries, that was something that people really loved hearing about. And as you say, like, it just recapping the stories, it's not just about this is a really, you know, this is our review of the golf course, or this is our review of golf in this part of the UK. It's actually just bringing it all together as to like how we found it, general stories and anecdotes from the day as to how, you know, we played, or funny stories that happened out on the course, people we met, you know, little bits of history that we're able to soak up on the trip round. And I think it's something that we could definitely try and build on going into 2022.
Yeah, I think the paradox of it all is that we've started a podcast, but we've never really wanted to be the center of the party. You know, we've always wanted to put the courses first, and we've always tried to steer clear a little bit of talking about our own golf, even though invariably it does happen when we talk about going to these places. But I think it is something that was well received, and, you know, definitely there's space to do more of in 2022.
So I guess moving beyond just focusing on the podcast, trips as a whole, I guess we've done a lot more this year, you guys in particular, in the autumn time too. We've been fortunate enough to travel pretty much the length and breadth of the UK and play a lot of great courses. So which trips stick out in the mind for you guys as being particularly memorable? I know it's like trying to choose your favorite child and all that sort of stuff, but come on, if you had to be forced to pick.
Teeing it up on the old was a bit good. I missed out on that a few times, never had the opportunity to do it. So when we did it, when we were filming it back in April or May, probably filmed that. I mean, we didn't release it for a while, but yeah, that was pretty special. I mean, we'd been up that way before and not played it. And I remember like we basically walked around the first and 18th and walked around the R&A clubhouse and stuff, and you're kind of peering in and thinking about it and finally getting to tee off and actually hit the middle of the bat and be somewhere down the fairway.
Yeah,
it was quite special. So that was that was a real standout for me.
That's definitely the one that sticks in my memory the most as well. So of all the trips that we've done as a collective, I would say the Carnoustie St Andrews Crail Leg, which was the first time we went up and started tackling some of the old Tom Trail stuff. That was the one. But also because Carnoustie just blew me away totally. And I know it's renowned as being, you know, a world-class golf course, but for some really strange reason, it was always one where I was a bit like, name me an open rotor course you're not that fussed about playing. And I'd have probably said Carnoustie. I wasn't fussed about playing, but, you know, relative to the others. And I was absolutely blown away by how good Carnoustie was. And then I remember being pretty tired. We'd had a full few days at it, traveling, filming, interviewing like crazy. Like, I mean, those interview setups just alone were like, we really overserviced how much we went into there. And I remember getting to the last day of the trip. We're playing Crail and we were going to head back. And I think we're all a bit tired. Bruce had to turn the car around in the car park and go in search of Pret just to go and get some croissants and coffee because, you know, it's well before the clubhouse was open. And we just had an absolute barnstormer of a day, didn't we, down at Crail?
Yeah.
And that really surprised us. So I think that one sticks in my memory as well. But I think some of it as well has just been, it's always been the ones that surprised us a little bit as well. There's been some nice little trips as well. Things like, you know, when me and Tom went down to Surrey, that was just really nice getting to spend some time playing some of those courses and seeing Sunningdale Heath and, you know, some of the other sort of big hitters in Surrey area. There's no getting away from it. When I look back on this year and the courses we've played collectively, I do genuinely feel ridiculously privileged to have done that. And that's a direct result of, you know, we put some hard yards in to try and make some nice content for people to listen to and for things for people to watch. But without people listening and enjoying it and taking some value out of it, it's pretty redundant. So, you know, the fact we're getting to do all this and live our best golfing lives, really, is amazing, isn't it? You are absolutely, it is amazing. You are. It's a bit of a, without kind of being too emotional about it, it's really nice. And that's a thank you to the listeners and the viewers, really.
Yeah, definitely. And the people you meet as well along the way. They just make it so enjoyable. And there's just, it's amazing what a small world the golfing community really is. Again, it's going to sound like a broken record, but I think that first trip up to St Andrews, Carnoustie, Crail, I guess a big part of that was just feeling that we're finally let free, you know, lockdown kind of been lifted. We were able to travel in a limited capacity for filming and for work and getting up there and playing, having stunning weather. And then just, you know, at the end of the trip at Crail, maybe not going in with the highest of expectations, having just played the old course in Carnoustie, but just having a brilliant morning. The course, I mean, I'm going to go out and say it. That course is probably the best conditioned course we played all year. Those greens, were, like, cut and rolled. And then just to kind of come in and have like an absolute education on old Tom Morris and the history of Crail, the Crail Golfing Society from David Roy. And you know, what a great guy he's been getting to know. Superb trip. And the other trip that I think really lingers in the memory too was going up to Prestwick, having that long drive up after the mixer, which is something we need to get into and give due credit and time to in its own right. But having that long drive up to Prestwick and then just getting out there on a sort of hazy June evening and playing 18 holes there in the sort of setting sun and then playing another 18 the next day just to film it all and interviewing Ken Goodwin and Andrew Lockhead, that was pretty special.
Yeah, that trip was like, I mean, not only was every single course that we played absolute worldies, but they were all on opposite sides of the country. I mean, we did Prestwick, North Berwick, Royal Aberdeen, and Cruden Bay in one trip. It was like
and
so
King's
much
Barnes.
Driving.
I hate to remind
Kings
you.
And King's Barnes. It was so much driving, but they were all, that was like the quirky leg of the trip. The ones we were filming for the series being Prestwick, North Berwick and Cruden Bay. And yeah, I mean, that was such a good trip as well.
I don't think
it?
We had a drop of rain either. I mean, again, no. all these sort of statements about, oh, how rainy it is in Scotland. The first trip we went up, we had just blisteringly, you know, glorious sunshine, blue skies around Carnoustie and St. Andrews and Crail, even if it was a bit colder. And then the Prestwick leg as well, Prestwick, Cruden Bay, Royal Aberdeen, North Berwick, King's Barnes, that was all fantastic sunshine. To be fair, in the middle at Nairn and Cullen, we did get a bit of the sort of northern storm that came in.
It was a sea fret, wasn't it?
I remember, do you remember playing that round of foursomes around Nairn in minus 3 degree temperatures, just being like, wow, this is...
No, that was the dark spell of the trip. It was a brilliant place to see, but I remember that point thinking, this is really starting to get quite cold now.
Yeah.
It was no joke for a few holes.
That was great.
Yeah,
fun,
I mean, like,
though,
it's a bit like, it's crazy when you reel off the courses like that and you look at it and yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's frightening. I would say, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say for all of us, the one, I mean, certainly for me, Prestwick was the one that I want to go back to the most, and maybe that's just it's had like it hit us all, I think, in a pretty remarkable way, Prestwick.
Yeah, definitely.
For me, it's the old. I don't feel like, because of the filming and things, I didn't feel like I, you know, dialed in and strung 18 holes together on the old. I'd like to go back and tackle that beast.
Yeah.
But I'm with you on the Prestwick was just like blown away, like completely nothing like I was expecting.
I remember you'd been one under at the turn around the old, and then you hadn't done any filming in the afternoon. And Bruce got through 11, in fact. Oh, no, we got through 10, and then you pegged it up at 11th. And Bruce is like, come on, let's get the drone up. And to be fair, it was an absolute money shot. You got the drone up all of a sudden. And I to be in Bruce's defense here, I would say that was more a symptom of playing 10 holes. Well, the opening nine pretty much straight down a gale, and then the next nine straight into it. But
I don't think I broke 90 in the end, but 35
you had 59 watch on after about 7.
Listening to me like, yeah, this, what's all the fuss about the old course here? I'm thinking, yeah, as soon as we turn around, this bloke's gonna get absolutely toasted here.
yeah, that was good.
I think
it would be remiss not to talk about the Sam and I's trip to Northern Ireland. That was a bit special as well. We took Sam Clapham along and did County Down, Portrush, Bush and the Ban. That was pretty good as well. That was
somewhere I'm keen to spend a bit more time next year.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, Royal County Down, we've heard all the superlatives. I've not played it. I guess you're going in there with extremely high expectations. I don't know if there's another trip that maybe for you, Tom, the old course, I don't know whether it was a similar level of hype. Going in there though, did it sort of live up to that? What were you thinking, and did it live up to those expectations?
Yeah, it surpassed it. The old course is a weird one because I don't think it's just the feeling around the place which makes it so amazing. You know, it's like it's the people walking down the street with golf bags on. It's like everywhere you look, you recognize something, and that, you know, and teeing it up in front of the R&A clubhouse with the biggest fairway in the history of the planet, and thinking, oh, Christ, I'm not sure if I can hit it. you know, that's the whole experience is amazing. And everyone's watching you, and like people in the street stop and watch. You know, when you've got spare time in St. Andrews, you just go down and sit on the steps and watch people tee off. That's what you do, you know. Like, it's that whole experience is amazing. County Down, the way that differed for me is I was going in and expecting an outrageously good golf course, and it still exceeded my expectations.
I'd subscribe to that. I've got a question for you boys, and I will preface this with, I know mine. What is your absolute low point of the jar this year?
You can't just spring this on me. This is unfair.
Do you want me to lead with mine?
I think I know what you're going to say. It's probably driving back. No, that was probably in 2020, though, to be fair. Driving back from the original Scotland trip.
Oh, that was when you nearly killed me. No. This one's better. This one's better than that. So
well, you go,
the low point for me was getting kicked out of a graveyard with Mills in St. Andrews. This was, without doubt, one of the most bizarre. So we had a spare hour or two, I believe, before.
I was catching flies at this point, wasn't I? I was designated driver. We'd come back from the trip up north.
That's right. We were going to go and play. So it was the same one as the Prestwick and the Royal Aberdeen trip.
Before we went to King's Barnes, and I obviously put in some hard yards behind the wheel and decided to catch an extra hour in bed. And you blokes have gone off to try and capture the graveyard as part of the sort of old Tom Morris story of St. Andrews.
Yeah, so we're trying to get into the graveyard because you just want to get a few shots of, you know, there's a whole load of very important grave sites there, and it just adds to itself when you're talking about doing the old Tom films and driving home some of the points. Couldn't get in. Things shut. It's like 7 in the morning. So a few signs up sort of saying, you know, it's shut and there's a bit of COVID stuff. So I thought, well, okay, we'll hop the wall here, being very, very kind of mindful of where we're hopping onto, but hop the wall. And then there's a couple of people sort of milling around in the graveyard, look quite official. So for a bit, me and Mills were almost sort of playing Wolfenstein through the graveyard, kind of like peeping behind the castle and trying to time our sort of breaks to get to the far end, which is where old Tom's gravesite is. And the guys clocked us and said, you've got to get out of here. You've got to leave right now.
Hang on. Weren't you sort of crouched down, behind a tombstone? He's like, I can see you. You can come out.
Yeah.
He wasn't that
and
nice.
I'm sorry.
What are you doing?
And I will make this very clear that we were being... It was in no way disrespectful to anyone that's buried at St. Andrews, but we were just trying to sort of just stay out of the way of these officials and get to where we need to be to get the shots. Anyway, he sort of then says, you've got to get out. He's panic struck. And I'm thinking, right, okay, what's going on here? Expecting him to say maybe the castle's not safe or that could fall on you or health and safety. Apparently the reason we had to get out of the gravesite was due to COVID. So Tom, in his kind of infinite wisdom, you know, never to be... never to be proven wrong on anything. Tom just then replies to him, dry as anything. He says, well, they're all dead, aren't they? So surely, I don't understand how COVID affects this.
That's part of the story is true.
He didn't want to have logic thrown at him. As soon as logic was thrown at him, he's just...
I actually thought there was nowhere safer you could be than people that aren't respiring. So,
yeah.
I will preface this with, I wrote two emails to the council saying that we're going to be up there. Can we do some filming? I know it's closed, but can we go and film Old Tom's Graveyard? And got absolutely nothing in return. So I felt like they left me no option other than to hop the fence. But to
take matters into your own hands, yeah.
Yeah. But no, that was pretty low. Bruce, what's your low point then?
Yeah, I mean, nothing quite as entertaining as that. I think there was a moment partway through the final leg of the tour where I did switch swing patterns a couple of times.
I had a constant radius and soft neck beater was one that was being thrown around on arrival.
I just had a couple of, just a couple too many. That's the problem with hitting balls in a net over the winter and just not really getting out and playing. You can just go down a bit of a rabbit hole of trying stuff out. And I think I was just a little bit caught there and, happy to say I've put that behind me now, and I'm definitely, you know, one benefit of starting work is I've just made the game a lot simpler, it feels like, in my own head. But yeah, that'd probably be my low point, actually. Yeah,
when you look at those films from the first trip to Scotland and you look at the outrageous takeaway move you're working on, I remember Trotty messaging me going, what on earth is Bruce working on with his swing here? Looks outrageous. But then it's really softened out since.
No, we're a bit more sort of neutral now, a bit more planer.
I think one of the huge, I mean, we got to talk about the events for, you know, shortly, but I think one of the huge takeaways from the whole year for me, which I wasn't aware of, was that Sam messages Zach Blair. Did you know this?
I'm sure you've got a montage stitched together. I'm not quite sure I spent an hour-long podcast constantly reminding him that we were messaging, but...
We recently went to Northern Ireland. In fact, I think I might have mentioned to you when we were messaging. Obviously, we'd been messaging a little bit before you came over. I'd got wind that you were coming over. So, funny enough, we'd been messaging, hadn't we? We messaged quite a bit about St. George's Hill trip.
But yeah, that was quite nice. When we went to the...
This is the danger, Bruce, of having Tom sat behind the wheel editing podcasts, as he can construct whatever narrative he wants. I'm sure we got to given the keys to the kingdom, we could find something equally damning.
At Cleve Hill, we just released that podcast on the tee. So I was like, yeah, that was a nice podcast you did with Zach Blair. That was good, wasn't it? I was like, did you boys know that Sam was messaging Zach Blair? Mm. I think it was James Hornsby said, oh, we all know.
Very good.
That was pretty good. But the mixers, let's talk about the mixers. That's a new thing as well. I mean, that was an exciting addition to the 2021 roster.
I think we've kind of covered them as we've gone through, haven't we? We obviously had the Christmas party recently. We had Cleve Hill. We've had the mixer in June. And there's some exciting stuff to come.
We have a very exciting announcement, don't we, coming in the next weeks, months, about a sort of spring meeting that we're looking at organising. So I think the events have been brilliant. clearly, I think they've been a brilliant addition to the Cookie Jar sort of arsenal, for want of a better term.
Why have you enjoyed them? Why are they so good for you, Bruce?
Ah,
come on, Bruce.
Let's just say my bio on the website finally needs a bit of editing, because the sort of burden of a long-term partner or wife. But sort of gradually being kind of put to bed. Yeah.
Is this another first for this? Is another first for the jar? Have we got an announcement?
It's one of your another exclusive announcements.
This is absolute tosh here.
And has been for a while.
Yeah, there's no more market for the Fitzpatrick boys.
I don't know if this is the kind of sort of insinuation we'll be creating on a podcast. Is that?
I think so. It's all fine, isn't it? But I think we're always conscious of our listeners' time, and I think it's about time that Sam gave us our even better ifs. So
I don't know why I'm being sprung on to do the year end appraisals. I'm not sure it's. I mean, I can throw some shots, but I think this is a 360 degree exercise, gentlemen. I would expect that we are transparent and honest. Absolutely. In here. And it's, you know, as the overlord of the jar, I wouldn't expect you guys to pull any punches coming in my direction either.
But we're all afraid of getting sacked.
No, I think your jobs are safe. Certainly yours is, Tom. Anyway, that's for sure.
Don't say anything, Bruce.
I think collectively, I think we've all had a pretty good year in it. Like, if you'd have said to me a year ago, this is where we're going to be sat and what we'll have achieved, I'd have been like, there's no way we're going to get that done, particularly with 3 months out of the year. We're just never going to get it all done. I think one of the biggest memories I'll have would be the infighting we had around some of the narrations throughout the course of the year and the attention to detail. And I think, let's face it, all three of us are alpha personalities. So it's quite funny when you look at that and think that, you know, we're arguing over grammar, or we're arguing over, it's semantics of wordings on a narration.
Whether Alan Robinson did 12 double greens on the old course or 10 double
Alan
greens.
Robertson, but yes, you're absolutely right. Your point's well made.
It was almost as if it was deliberate.
I think, and that comes from a place of care, doesn't it? So I don't know. I mean, look, you want your appraisals. I think you're all A stars. I think well done. You can be very proud of it. I think, Bruce, it'd be nice to see you move out of the head of audit space at times. You're an outstanding auditor. Your attention to detail is without doubt your strongest suit within the jar. I think, you know, your ability to look at something quite critical and pull out 50 spelling errors is actually, it does give a level of credibility when it doesn't look like it's been written by a 5-year-old. So I think that
is something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
It certainly needs to be done.
We pride ourselves on the audit division. I think Sam and I have both gotten a lot better at sort of understanding the ways that Tom Mills works. You know, there was a little bit of difficulty sort of getting the head around some of the communication early on the WhatsApp groups when we were talking about podding. Mm. And you know, I'd maybe offer up, say, shall we pod at 7:30? And Sam would say, yes, that's fine. We wouldn't hear from Tom for a few hours and say, Tom, what's the story here? To which he responded, I only reply if there's an issue, otherwise it's all good, which I don't know if any other person in the world has ever operated with that sort of business practice.
That's because it's not worth his time, Bruce. It's because it's not worth his time.
Sam and I have definitely got better at sort of...
Have we noticed how this has turned into a Tom Mills attack? I'm happy. Yeah, let's keep going.
Hang on. I think in there is buried within your developmental point, which is exactly what you've just walked into, young man. Sorry, Bruce.
But then in the interest of, you know, a balance, I think Sam's also had a really, really good year. I think, you know, we're probably going into 2022 with slightly fewer, you know, sort of club throws and you know, Stern telling offs when his own sort of level of golf just slips beyond the sort of lofty goals that he sets himself. It's always brilliant, actually, I think, you know, teeing up at some of these courses that we're fortunate enough to play. And obviously the emphasis is on filming, but Sam always wants to have a card, some sort of competition going in the background just to, you know, make it even more stressful than it already is running around a golf course in 3 hours with fading light.
I'm not sure if you find it is the card. It always starts in his pocket and it always starts being marked, but depending on how Sam's round goes as to whether that card will
be completed. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure I'd buy into that. I've got a whole wedge of them on here. I'll happily share the evidence.
If he's sort of knocking around par, it'll be completed. But if it's mm-hmm. anything that's over, we've all
I'm just
lost
having
our
fun
sport.
Actually. We're here to film. Yeah, that'll be the life that comes out.
But no, it's been a very, very enjoyable year, and I've enjoyed nearly every minute of it with you chaps. But
likewise, here.
I think next year will be interesting to see where we go with it. You know, a lot of people, like, you know, we obviously speak to a lot of people. People always inquire about stuff, and the same questions come up year after, month after month. And, you know, I think, you know, it's right now, I think it's fair to say we love every minute of doing this. Yeah. And long may it continue, right?
And I think, like you said earlier on in the pod, if someone had said to us this time when we did the appraisals last year, you know, you would have done The Old and Carnoustie and Royal County Down and 20 odd films, and we hadn't even started the films really at that point, and another 57 podcasts. Don't forget there were two mysterious podcasts that disappeared in the ether that shall not be named. So we did 59 podcasts really, and I think that, you know, if we'd have asked last year whether we'd achieved all that, we have. So let's we don't know what's coming. The honest answer, we've gotten really no idea what's coming up in the next 12 months, but we'll tackle it with both horns. And
I think we've got a plan. I think, jokes aside, there's a plan, isn't there? So I think there's one in the podcasting sphere. There's one thing that I think we're hugely excited about, which we're not going to drop yet. That will be the next podcast, I suspect. And within there, we'll kind of share more then. On the events thing, I think there's an opportunity to put that on steroids. I genuinely do. I think there's a chance to absolutely put that on steroids.
Any other class A's we could put it on?
I mean, can we actually, like, again, this is where you criticize my audit function, but I'd be saying, can we just scale the events and look to sort of grow them in maybe stature and frequency. But instead, let's just go with something a little bit, you know, sort of illicit bodybuilder references and say, let's put these events on steroids. But, you know, that's why I'm criticized for being the audit bloke.
We want to put the events into sort of like a Bryson program for 3 months and look at the results that can be achieved there. And I think there's things we haven't even started doing yet that I think will be big next year.
Yeah, quite right. And I think the only sort of final point on all of that is just to say a big, big thank you to all you guys who listen and follow along and indulge some of the very questionable chat that comes out of this podcast and our other content at times. But we absolutely love doing it, and it's only really possible as a result of all of your support and sort of you know, words of encouragement. So thank you.
Hear. So thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for listening for the entirety of 2021. And we look forward to speaking to you further in 2022.
Adios. And just to clarify all the cryptic messaging, yeah, I did manage to tag myself a girlfriend at the Cookie Jar Mixer. Watch this.